The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fucking protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called a national guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was building your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. This is Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is October the 20th, 2015. Again, I always hope when I come on these airwaves that you are safe and sound, your loved ones, your family members, your community is safe behind these enemy lines. And because I know at any moment, You can lose your life, you can lose your property, you can lose your freedom even, and put into slavery. So, I mean that with all sincerity. I hope that, you know, when you tune in, when I come on air at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, that you are safe and sound, because hopefully you have learned to just be aware of your surroundings and just know. You know, there's people out there looking to victimize you. And so just taking certain precautions can save you some of those problems and getting snared in some of those traps that this society has laid out there for you. But unfortunately, you know, every day that we come on, we could report on a number of casualties across battlefield America. Today we will have open lines. We don't have any guest speakers scheduled for you today, but we are working on bringing some people on who will share some of the news that they report on and their analysis of different aspects of the battlefield and whatnot. So we're working on that. So today is just open lines. We'll be on for an hour. There's plenty to report. There's never a shortage of information that needs to be disseminated out there to the masses, but we will have open lines, so the phone lines are open, 704-951-5030 is the studio line, the conference line, and sometimes I forget it, 641-715-3660, the participant code, of course, is 549-032-POUND. And you just hit star 61. Anything that you have heard on this station, doesn't matter if it was on this program, any of the other programs, any other stories that you have seen out there on social media. If you have any questions or if you want to know about whether or not people have heard about this particular story, then, yeah, you could use those numbers to call in and give us your battlefield report. And someone shared a battlefield report with me today, a listener and contributor to the Black Talk Media Project, which runs the Black Talk Radio Network. But they shared a story of this young man. His name is Corey Jones. I think he was only 31 years old, out of Palm Beach Gardens, and he was killed by police, and he was number 948, which is an unofficial tally that is kept by citizen journalists. These people that run killed by police, they prefer to remain anonymous, and for good reasons. For good reasons, because there's a lot of people that don't like that people gathering such intelligence on the activities of these people who are making themselves and have been made into enemies of the people. So that's a good strategy, to remain anonymous as best you can. But I'm no dummy. They know. They have their ways of finding you out and whatnot. So you're still taking a risk, and so it's still courageous for you to engage in such activity, because we need the information. So Corey Jones is a black male who had car trouble, and he was killed by a plainclothes officer. You know, he didn't have on a uniform or anything. He was not easily identifiable. He's driving an unmarked car. Corey Jones had car trouble waiting on a tow truck, and something happened in between the time that Corey Jones, victim number 948 that we know about, something happened in the short amount of time that he talked to his brother on the cell phone and said he's waiting on a tow truck because he's broken down on the side of the highway at the exit. Then next thing you know, his family's finding out that he has been killed by police, killed by the Palm Beach Gardens police, to be specific. And we also have names. And so he's not even the latest victim, though. He's not even the latest victim. The latest victim was earlier today in California. Los Angeles sheriff's deputies killed a man who they say was trying to evade a drunk driving checkpoint. They fired into the car. Kind of seemed similar to the story in Cleveland with the couple, because there was a passenger also in this vehicle. I think she jumped out the car or something like that. But, yeah, there was a man in Los Angeles. I don't have all the details, but pretty much they, instead of getting out of the way of the car and blocking people's path, and you going to force them to surrender and whatnot, you know. And so you just stand in front of the car and you try to kill the person because you've seen it in the movies and whatnot, and you don't try to get out the way and, you know, just follow this person and chase them. The protocol is to kill them on sight. Kill them on sight because, you know, you didn't stop when I said stop, and you see me, I'm going to stand in the road and prevent you from leaving. And if not, if you don't stop, I'm going to kill you. That's pretty much the procedure, and I don't think that's the correct procedure. You could just follow people, you know, and get, away from the public and further away from the public and stop putting other people's lives in danger. So I don't have all the details of that story, but there are more details on Corey Jones, who was killed by police. So I'm going to let y'all listen to some of the audio reports, then share some of my thoughts with you. Again, today is just open lines. If you have any news to report, any case updates, whatever you want to share, this is the people's platform. This is the people's program. So whatever it is you want to discuss. But yeah, Corey Jones was killed by a Palm Beach Gardens cop waiting for a tow truck in Florida. Let me see. Now, there was a video that was embedded in this. Let me see if I can find some more video reports and then let our radio listeners hear some of the audio to it. And this is coming to you from the Sun Sentinel. A family asking for healing and answers at the Palm Beach Gardens. Officer shoots and kills. I think this is a Boynton. Man, so he wasn't from there, but that's where they killed him at.
Right now, a family is demanding answers after a local musician broken down on the side of the road is shot and killed by an officer driving an unmarked car. The shooting happened on the southbound exit ramp of I-95 and PGA Boulevard in Palm Beach Gardens. Tonight, we have team coverage with CBS 12's Al Pefley live with the new details about the Palm Beach Gardens police officer who was involved in this fatal shooting. But we begin with Israel Balderas. He spoke with family and friends who are mourning and want answers tonight. Israel.
Well, we are live right here is the off-ramp from I-95 South and PGA Boulevard. Right behind me is where the Palm Beach Gardens Police Department admits one of its officers shot and killed 31-year-old Corey Jones. And while the investigation into this deadly shooting continues, tonight friends and family are trusting God for some answers.
Big blow. A big blow. It hurt, man. It hurt so bad.
I need...
At the Bible Church of God in Boynton Beach, worshipers, young and old, gathered on Monday, asking God for healing, peace, and justice. Corey Jones meant the world to all of these folks, but to his cousin Trey, he was like a brother.
If I'm not in church, if you don't see me one or two Sundays, still call me.
Trey's mom, Dale, was also at church to mourn the death of her nephew. This is where Corey spent most of his time, playing these drums. And according to his aunt, the praise and worship was inspiring. That's the kind of person the family will always remember.
Anything you need, Corey would be right there. If you needed a shirt, he would give you his shirt. He would be cold just to keep you warm.
With hands lifted up and eyes closed, words of prayer followed the tears for Corey. And in the minds and hearts of family and friends, they're also asking why. Why did a Palm Beach Gardens police officer kill a precious child of God?
He don't deserve this. He don't. And we just need justice.
We're back out live now. Corey's grandmother died on Thursday, so the Bible Church of God down in Boynton Beach was already preparing for funeral services on Saturday. And now, after what happened here this weekend, that church community is preparing to mourn two lives. Reporting live in Palm Beach Gardens, I'm Israel Balderas, CBS 12 News.
A lot of people hurting tonight. Thank you, Israel. And our team coverage continues now with CBS 12's Al Pefley, who is learning more about the police officer and why Palm Beach Gardens police say he was forced to fire. He joins us live at the Gardens Police Department. Al?
Liz, this officer has only been with the department here for about 6 months. We found, though, he has at least 7 years' experience in law enforcement and has worked for at least one other police department in the area.
What really happened at 3:15 in the morning Sunday during a police shooting? This is what we know. Palm Beach Gardens police officer Newman Raja was on duty wearing plain clothes and driving an unmarked police car when he stopped to investigate what he thought was an abandoned vehicle on the southbound exit ramp at I-95 and PGA Boulevard. Police say Raja got out of his unmarked police car and was confronted by an armed man, 31-year-old Corey Jones. Raja fired and Jones was killed.
In any particular case where a suspect displays a weapon, the officer is going to have to defend himself.
Mike Driscoll is a retired FDLE agent who's now a private investigator. He says an officer has just a split second or less to decide what to do.
He would be thinking to protect himself and or others and other officers from a position of cover, if he's able to. If he's not, mentally he has to be prepared to draw his weapon and fire if need be.
Records show Raja worked for Atlanta's police from May 2008 through April 2015. He left that department voluntarily to take a job with Palm Beach Gardens Police. According to FDLE, he has not faced any disciplinary action in his career. He's certified as a firearms instructor, a medical first responder instructor, and law enforcement vehicle operations instructor. He's also had training in organized crime, gangs, narcotics, and dangerous drugs, as well as interviews and interrogations.
Well, some might say in a scenario like this, the officer could retreat, but Driscoll says that could make things worse because the officer could wind up getting shot in the back. Driscoll says he doesn't have enough details on this yet to determine if the officer's actions were justified. Meanwhile, Raja is now on paid administrative leave, which is standard in cases like this. Live, Al Pefley, CBS 12 News.
Thank you, Al. And the hashtag Justice for Corey has been trending on Twitter. You can see just how many tweets people have sent out about the situation. CBS 12 is on top of this story, both on air and online. Just visit cbs12.com for the latest updates 24/7.
All right, we'll stop it there. Now, didn't they say, correct me if I'm wrong, in the beginning of this 5-minute report that the officer had been fired from another police department or forced to resign. And then towards the end there, you know, they're reading out his record and all that, like, you know, what is all of that matter in investigating this killing, investigating this shooting? So because it appears to me that this is another case of somebody having complaints filed against them at a police department and being allowed to just quit their job, face, you know, termination or whatnot, and just go away. And then they don't have a record, or they're not prosecuted for any constitutional violations, civil rights violations, or any federal crimes that they may have committed. They just are allowed to resign, face no kind of prosecution, no kind of penalty, and they go somewhere else. That's the case in Tamir's Rice case with that officer fired. A professional even said that this man, you know, a professional law enforcement officer said this man shouldn't even have owned a gun, let alone be given a license to shoot and kill little 12-year-old kids on the street. Because he looking for some action, just like that officer Timothy Loman's father said. So that's what it sounds like to me in this case of Corey Jones, is that now if the guy didn't have the expert, the so-called expert, and really is just a police propagandist, probably belonged to the police union. But often when they get these experts, you know, you have to check their credentials, because it's been shown time and time again that they be, it be people that they put on television as experts that ain't experts on nothing. They really don't even have the credentials that they claim to have, which I think is a recent case with a Fox News analyst that they bring on as a CIA expert. Ain't never even worked for the CIA or any other kind of intelligence agency to be an expert in that. He was a complete fraud about his entire bio and his professional work life and whatnot. So, I mean, it just seemed out of character. Why would this young black man, 31 years old, regarded as being very spiritual? I'm sure if he had a criminal record, because it's been 2 days now since his killing on Sunday afternoon. If he had a criminal record and they could put him out there as a thug and all this and that, they would have done it already. But, you know, the only thing that you heard was a good report from his church, from his family members, from his community. But we are not hearing such reports from the community about this particular officer. We don't know if this man identified himself or not. He's in plain clothes. He's in an unmarked car. We don't know if he identified himself as a police officer. Obviously, he wasn't coming to help. But he wants you to believe from his story, he wants us to believe that just for no reason whatsoever, that this 31-year-old black man just attacked him. There was no mention of, did he have a gun? Did he have a baseball bat? Did he have a tool that perhaps he was trying to use to fix his car? We don't know if he had a flat tire. We don't know what. We don't know any of that. But we're supposed to believe that a person who is not an escaped murderer from a prison or something like that, like those white men in New York, someone who the police is not even looking for them. We're supposed to believe that this person just lost their mind and tried to attack a police officer and kill a police officer. If it was a gun laying on the ground or whatnot, we would know that by now. They wouldn't be skimpy on the details. So the family has complained about a lack of transparency, so it makes it seem like they're in cover-up mode. And I would agree with that based off the evidence of what we're seeing thus far. So it's been 2 days, which is standard procedure, you know. They get a vacation or desk duty or something like that. may not even have to talk to internal affairs or anybody that's investigating. I'm thinking of our interview with Ms. Sanders with It's On Us, that organization that was putting forth that police accountability legislation and keeping a database for on these killers. But this is just tragic. Again, the other day, Wednesday night, when Yohanan hadn't called in to help host New Abolitionist Radio, then got a text and he broke down on the side of the highway. And I said on air, and it's in the podcast, you know, keep him in your thoughts and prayers. You know, if you're a praying person, if not, send some good vibrations or something. Because he's broke down behind these enemy lines. And so between the time that it takes for his people to get to him and one of these cops or anyone else out there to get to him and kill him, you know, it could be just a matter of minutes. So I'm just not buying any kind of notion that this man just attacked. See, what they probably waiting on, I bet they got the body. The medical examiner has the body. They probably running a drug test on the body. They gonna see if he been smoking weed. Even if he has just been smoking weed, they gonna say, see, this man was a drug user and he smoked weed, and yes, he attacked this cop. That's what they looking for right now. That's the pattern that I have seen in all these years of covering and reporting these type of stories. That's the pattern. That's the procedure. It's like they reading out a book, and indeed they are. They reading out of books called SOP, Standard Operating Procedure. And it's corrupt, man. These are some corrupt people. So he is the latest victim. Not the latest victim, I'm sorry. But he is a victim. And there are just so many. I was thinking of Mr. James Allen that was killed in Gastonia, which is in my county, a veteran in his own home. Police broke in the middle of the night, called themselves doing the welfare check, and end up shooting this man. And then, you know, they getting the expert, the local so-called expert, an attorney that practices law or retired or something in Gaston County. I knew the dude. Lock bail, and he going on there saying, oh, you just can't point guns at cops and stuff like that. Well, yes, you can if you don't know they're cops. If they're breaking into your house in the middle of the night and it's dark and they're not, you know, identifying themselves, but they creeping like they gonna run up on something, on a criminal or something. Instead of saying, you know, this is the police or, you know, so Mr. Allen, I haven't even heard anything. I'm going to do a quick Google search right quick. James Allen. Because that's been, the time is going by. And I was thinking about that the other day. They just going to act like this didn't even happen. Because the local media, I follow them on Facebook and whatnot. They ain't talked, and they really didn't talk about this case in the beginning to help push, the standard propaganda procedure of blaming the victim. Let me see. James Allen, Gastonia, North Carolina. See what's the latest on him. As of February the 8th, 2015, the SBI is investigating. So that's the latest on the web. Let's check the news feed. In the news feed, it's going all the way back to February the 8th. So how long do it take for these investigations to be concluded? I mean, what do you need to test? What kind of fibers you need to run? You know who shot who. So why has it taken almost a year? What, 8 months, 9 months to do an investigation? When we know the fire department and the police broke into this man's house about 11 p.m. midnight, called themselves doing a welfare check, broke into his back door, right, pried the back door open. go, a cop goes in, Gastonia cop goes in, and then says that Mr. Allen had a gun in his hand, which they reported he had a little .22 pistol in his hand to defend himself. You know, he veterans, he knows how to handle a firearm. It's his Second Amendment right. He's going to protect his home. But see, you know, we're not hearing anything like, you know, what the cops said. Did they announce themselves? Was it dark? Was it what? You know what I'm saying? Oh, we're just supposed to accept that, oh, this cop's life is more important than the one that he claimed he there to check up on. See, that's when you had to take one for the team. Now, you know you broke into this man's house, number one. And he's well within his rights to defend his life and his property with a firearm. And you just going to shoot him because he don't know who you are, and you say you see a firearm. You supposed to back out of his house and say, sir, calm down. I'm backing out on the police. And no, we don't know anything. So we're left to just imagine it, how it went down in our heads. And that doesn't instill confidence in the public. Let me tell you that. And it's not like they just gunning down people here in Gaston County like that. But in that instance, they gunned down James Allen. That one cop gunned down James Allen, a veteran in his 70s. So I certainly feel the Joneses family's trepidation and, you know, what's up with these people? And that doesn't even sound like my family member just, you know, out of his mind gonna charge a cop with what? The family said they haven't even told them, you know, what the alleged weapon was. What was it? What was the alleged weapon? It could have, what, his cell phone? Because we've seen them shoot people for having cell phones. What was it? A comb or something? Perhaps he had a pick. I don't know. You know, he had like a little short afro or something. Maybe he had a pick with Black Power, you know, fist on it, and he had that in his hand. You know, is what was the weapon? See, they can't even tell you that, but they can tell you that the cops said that he charged at him with a weapon. And again, you know, this mess that the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch is talking about, it's not feasible, or she doesn't support a mandate to make these police departments report the number of people they kill. I mean, that's not even going far enough. We, like I think was discussed the other day on this program, might have been yesterday, we actually need to know how many people that may necessarily not be getting killed by police, but getting shot, getting maimed, you know, then they're like, you know, might be disabled for the rest of their lives and have to draw Social Security because the cop killed them. I mean, shot them. Might have paralyzed them, might have injured them in such a way that qualifies them for disability. So we don't even have a database to even tell us how many people are just getting shot by cops but survive, or tased by cops, and those should be counted too. Because you know why? Because we have many reports of people dying after being tased by cops, prison guards, and others. So we, you know, the people need to be demanding more transparency, more accountability, to get a more accurate picture of the murder and the mayhem that's going on across USA Inc. We don't even have a true picture. We don't even have a true picture. So, telephone numbers to get in. What are your thoughts? You have any news to report? The area code 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. And *61 to signal the host. So we're going to take a station identification break, perhaps a short message music, and then check some of the social media feeds of some of the pages that I follow to see what other news we can talk about today. Again, it's open lines. It is October the 20th, 2015 on a Tuesday afternoon. I know coming up on Tuesday night, every Tuesday night, 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, check out Why You Mad Sun Radio, which is simulcasted right here on the Black Talk Radio Network digital radio station. Tando Radio will have a program coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, and they will have a security expert, a person to come on and talk about, you know, the legs of survival. And one of those legs is security. So make sure you keep it locked right here on Black Talk Radio Network. And we will be back on the other side.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Let's take a call from the studio line, and let me get those numbers out one more time. The studio line is 704-951-5030. The conference line, you can also ask a question or make a comment from there as well. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. And then just star 6-1 to comment on air. But let's go to the studio line. Looks like we got Mr. Max Parthas, new abolitionist, on the line with us there. Is that you, Max, or somebody is using Max's telephone?
Peace, Scotty. It is me, Max. And, you know, every now and then I do have company here that will call into the program. Absolutely. How you doing, brother?
I'm not going to complain. I was glad to hear that good report for those that haven't been tuned in to the station. Max was a victim of that hurricane. His family has been displaced. And I was happy to see that you were having the needs of your family met relocate from this disaster. So I was happy to see that, because we had listeners emailing us saying, hey, is there a GoFundMe for Max Parthas and his family so that we can help them with whatever we need? And I saw you made that good report on Facebook. So I'm glad to hear, you know, that it appears that you may have a smooth transition after experiencing a disaster like that personally in your family.
Exactly. That's actually why I called in to give the report, let you know, because I know you were very concerned and everybody else, that things are going smoothly. We have lost our house and all the furniture and stuff like that, and we're being forced to relocate, but FEMA has stepped up. They haven't actually given us any money yet, but they've made everything so very easy. So from my only experience with FEMA and a national natural disaster, they did exactly what I was hoping a government would do. So I got a thumbs up for them. We'll see if the check actually comes in the mail. And between supporters and families and fundraisers that are going on in our name, it's put us in a position where we're well on our way to our goal of being able to find another place. And we just went and looked at one today, as a matter of fact, which was really nice. It felt good to know that there's a tomorrow for us and that we're not going to be stuck into this situation.
Well, it's good to know that. Yeah, FEMA doesn't particularly have a good name in the black community, especially during Katrina and George Bush. And I forget the guy's name, Mr. Brown. I don't know what his first name was that was running FEMA at the time.
Right, I remember.
Yeah, and so it's good to hear that you had a different experience. We're not ones to come on here and say that USA Inc. and different agencies are useless or whatnot, but from a historical perspective, they don't have too much to brag about. So good to hear that at least in your case, you're getting some help from FEMA and they're being a help and not a hindrance.
Right, right. They even did the basics and brought us food and water and made sure that we were safe. And if we needed to get to a hotel or anything, they made arrangements for us for that. So that was all good. As I said, you know, if this is the type of help I would want in a natural disaster. And hopefully I don't get to experience more than one in my lifetime. So if you only experience one, that was a good thing. And if anybody would like to help us in our recovery efforts, you can PayPal donations for us to prismaticdreams@gmail.com, which is PrySmatic dreams, plural, @gmail.com. I thought about doing a GoFundMe, and a few other friends offered to do it. Maybe they'll do it, I'm not sure, but I was very hesitant about doing any kind of fundraisers on our own behalf like that. I think the next time, if I ever do a fundraiser, it's going to be on behalf of abolition and not necessarily on behalf of our own problems, even though they are dire.
Right. So before we take this call, I do want to, because today's open line, so we can open up the mic, but jury acquits a Baltimore uprising defendant. It seems to be the latest news that you have published on New Abolitionist Radio, and we love, because we talk about, in terms of 21st century slavery and human trafficking, jury nullification. And it seems to be a case there.
I like that story. I thought you might like that story. Another brother that's gotten away from the prison clutches and is seeing freedom where they could have gotten them easily. Like they got their young brother $500,000 bail for breaking the police window.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Alan Buford. Buford, I believe, right?
Right, I believe it was Alan Buford, the 18-year-old kid.
Oh, no, this guy is a different one. Al-Kabulon Marcus, Baltimore jury found him not guilty. He was one of hundreds of protesters arrested after the Baltimore police killing of Freddie Gray. And, you know, oftentimes what they try to do with people is stack charges on them. Say that you're going to get the max if a jury, you know, just really try to scare them into taking a plea bargain like they tried to do the NBA player Thabo Sefolosius that played for Philadelphia before the NYPD broke his leg and piled a bunch of false charges. They tried to tell him, they even offered him, you just plead guilty and then all you'll get is one day, 24 hours, not even 24 hours, you know, maybe 8 hours of community service. And then after 30 days, we'll sponge your record like it never happened. And Thabo wouldn't take the deal. And he went to a jury trial. And so that is something we have talked about. It's a problem in whether we're talking about the drug war or we're talking about, somebody out there engaged in a rebellion and uprising against the evil system of injustice, taking plea deals. And so he didn't take the plea deal. And he was like, give me a jury of my peers. And this jury found him not guilty. So don't have the details, but certainly worth looking into.
Yeah, it's definitely worth looking into. We hope that a lot more people would go towards juries rather than accepting this 97, 94% plea deal that seems to be tearing away the fabric of our constitutional rights, the right to a fair and speedy trial by a jury of your peers. That doesn't exist in this country anymore. So to see an example of that pop up every now and then is inspiring.
Yeah, and it's only now and then, again, that it's rare, is because it's rare that you have places in USA Inc. where you have a predominant black jury, number one, or, you know, where people aren't being, well, they might still be. We know they're excluding people from these juries through the felony disenfranchisement and whatnot. So, again, it's just rare. It's just rare. Let's welcome in area code 404 to the conversation. What's going on? Can we get a battlefield report from you? What's on your mind today?
Greetings to you, Scotty, and greetings to Max Farthas. How are y'all doing today? This is Sarah.
Greetings, Sister Sarah.
We surviving, Sister Sarah, just like you.
I'm just so shocked to hear that, Max. I'm so sorry what happened to you and your family, that y'all, what you said, y'all lost everything in the flood?
Yes, we lost everything in the flood and being forced to relocate. They've already put stickers on our house saying that it's restricted, so the whole lower floor we can't even use. We're just staying here for now as long as we can until we get into the next place. And luckily, people have helped us to make that happen.
I am so sorry to hear that. So, Scotty, if you, if I didn't, you could just keep repeating his information throughout the show so that we can see what we can do for him and his family to help them. Because I have some friends in South Carolina, and fortunately for me, one of them I heard from, and he and his wife, they managed to be okay. They didn't get any flooding, and they were right off of Garnet Ferry. So
right, we're right off Garnet Ferry, too.
Yeah, so he was fortunate because he was on a hill. So I told him, I said, y'all were fortunate that y'all were on top of a hill, so y'all kind of didn't get that deluge with the water, because as we said, everything goes downhill. So, but I'm very sorry to hear about you and your family.
Well, thank you. Thank
you. Max, you're welcome, Max. Max, since you were on the line and y'all are talking about 21st century slavery, I went to my mailbox yesterday, and I guess the people who used to live here years ago before we moved here, and this was, I received two different letters from two different individuals coming from the slave catchers. This person had a what is it? Failure to fasten seatbelt violation. This was just back in 2003, March 31st, 2003. And I'm still getting letters from some private collection company telling them they're collecting for the Dallas County Marshal's office.
Wow.
And I'm just saying to myself, I said, this don't make no sense. The fine is $110. And this is from almost 13 years ago. So I thought that this stuff kind of dropped off the system like most collection action, but I guess, you know, if
it's
you
debt.
In the system.
It's debt, and they sold it off. I mean, Sarah, I appreciate you sharing that report. I'm aware of the practice of collection agencies and stuff like that. I've had my dealings with some in the past and whatnot, but I did not know that you have counties. I'm not surprised, but this is the first time I've heard of, like, a county or a city or a municipality, a local so-called government selling the debt of tickets that people owe.
Exactly, because this letter says, this is from the City of Dallas Municipal Court, and it says, you know, and since you have not taken care of your delinquent court cases. So at first, I thought maybe it was some kind of child support action. So when I knows me because I was open to people's letter, and I just start reading it there, and I just see this young man. This is from the City of Dallas Municipal Court, and it says, failure to fasten your seatbelt, and the date this occurred was March 31st of 2003.
A seatbelt.
So I'm saying this don't make no sense. I said, this stuff, 2003, this is 2015. Mm-mm. And you sold this stuff off to some company. This is a private company called MSB Services, Municipal Service Bureau. They try to make themselves out to be a government agency. But this is they said this is a private debt collection company.
I wonder if that's some sort of scam. I wonder if that's for real.
No,
if the city. Yeah, but that's public information that they could get, right, Sarah? That either you or me can we can look up that sort of information if we have the name. I'm just saying. It could be that the city. I think you said of Dallas or the municipality has sold off that debt, or it could be a scam as well.
But within this, what they did in the body of the letter, they said the municipal court during.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that is a thing, that counties and the municipalities would sell their debt in bundles to outside agencies and leave it for them to collect at a profit.
Are you serious, guys?
I didn't say anything. That was Max.
Are y'all still there? Because I don't know what happened. I heard a recording.
Yes, we're still here.
Okay, because I heard somebody came on saying press 1 to return to some conference. I was wondering what the heck was going on.
Go ahead.
Mike, are you still there? Hello?
Yes. He's there. We can hear you.
Okay. Go ahead. I believe Max was speaking. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, I was just saying that I'm not surprised that is a thing. I could imagine that municipalities and counties would sell their debt via their tickets and fines that are owned in a lump sum in order for another agency, not even necessarily from the same state, to collect on those dates those debts. And if the people don't pay those debts, then they would probably use the local law enforcement and legal and judicial areas to prosecute those people for debt.
Even send bounty hunters after them, right?
Right. Send bounty hunters out after them. Exactly. Put warrants out on them. We report on these debtors' prisons returns often, so I could easily see that being an aspect of it happening. It's very similar to what happened during the with the hedge funds during the housing bubble, where they were selling off people's debt in parcels.
But this don't make no sense, because they're telling this person here to remit payments in correspondence to the Dallas Courts and Detention Services and to put a post office box and say the courts accept Visa or MasterCard, or you could come in there with certified funds. But I guess it's a subcontractor that they are collecting this money on behalf of them, because they say make it payable to Dallas
Courts. I wouldn't give them no money. If I was fined, if I really had that, I would go to the courthouse and settle it. If I was guilty of it or whatever, and we're just talking about a seatbelt violation. I have had a seatbelt violation. And then you're talking about the cost of court, which could be anywhere from $100 or more for the cost of court that they make you. The ticket may only be $35 or $60 or however much it is. But I would not pay a outside agency or anything like that. I would go straight to the courthouse, because if I give it to them, I mean, I'm not so sure that they will make any warrants or anything like. No, I'd just rather deal with the system directly. I'm not going through these agents. I'm definitely not giving them any money or whatnot. But I would be on full battlefield awareness mode, because I know that I got these bounty hunters out here that's looking for me.
One thing that
For a traffic ticket, because they can make money off of my body, and I could get killed in the process.
They sold that debt to foreign nations as well, because they've done that with our roads and bridges and tolls. A lot of our bridges and tolls are owned by China, collecting the funds as we pass over American roads and bridges. So I wouldn't be surprised if they even went that far as to sell our debt through things like tickets and fines to other nations.
Well, I hope this dude here, Mr. Jeremy Johnson, I hope wherever he's at, I hope he will go ahead and take care of this, because this stuff is from 12 going on 13 years ago. And to me, you would think that after time they would write this stuff off their books. But I guess with all of this, people tightening in their budget, they're probably going back into their debt files and pulling out all of these old cases that they didn't collect on, and they're recircling it. Because I could not believe when I looked at the discovery of March 2003. I said, good grief. I said, they've been really scrapping for money on now with everything getting tight.
And they don't have to do that. I want to make that clear. They do not have to do that. I could bring up a personal situation. You know, most of the time, if you look at my record, most of the stuff you're going to see on there is traffic stuff or either failure to appear or something like that on something traffic. But I had some old tickets when I was getting my license situation straightened out a couple of years ago. And I had like a ticket that was like maybe 8 years old or something like that. And I think I had like two of them. And so when I was trying to get my license and got the printout of my record and what I needed to take care of in terms of the ticket, and I stood in the line in the Mecklenburg County Courthouse along with a whole bunch of other people. It was probably about maybe 50, 60 other people. And he looked at, and the prosecutor, assistant prosecutor, of course, wasn't the man who was elected or anything like that, but they're a member of his staff, and they was like looking at what I had, and he was like, man, that's so old, I don't think I could get a conviction off of that. And he just wrote dismiss, and I ain't had to pay nothing. You know what I'm saying? So they had an option. They had an option. I think we have reported on the story about California talking about they going to give the people amnesty on their traffic tickets. But this is every day. Prosecutors and whatnot have this discretion. They don't have to sell the debt and then sell the debt to a private collection who might hire some bounty hunters to come strong arm you and to get this money off of you for this seatbelt violation. So wow, it is crazy, like you said, Sister Sarah. This is crazy.
Not only that, because my sister-in-law earlier this year, she couldn't renew her tag because she went through. They have all of these little toll places here, like Max saying that those toll booths all throughout Texas. So she must have ran a couple, went through the toll station, didn't pay the standard 50 cents or whatever that you're supposed to pay. And when she went to renew her tags, they told her she couldn't renew her tags because she had an outstanding bill that was $100 that had to be paid, and it wasn't even to the city of Austin, Texas, where she lives.
On a 50-cent toll.
She had some kind of outside company that she had to send the money to before they clear her records, and then she could go back to the DMV to renew her tags.
You said on a 50-cent toll, 50 cents?
She said when she would have asked them, well, I don't remember this. And they said, okay, they showed her, like, they snap your front and back tags to show the car that you're in, and it has a date stamp on it. And they said she went through this toll station, and she did not have a sticker, because every place out here, you could either have a sticker on your vehicle where you just don't have to pay it, or you could manually go ahead and pay. So she must have went through the unknowingly. And they said, okay, well, you did not pay this toll. So, therefore, it added up because over here, I think you renew your tags every 2 years. So, when she went to renew hers this year, they told her, they pulled it up and they said, well, you can't renew it because you have some outstanding fines that you need to get taken care of. So, she said, for what? And they said, well, you need to go to this agency and pay them. And it was not even associated with the state, like Max said, some outside company. So, she said she had to go to them, pay them the fee, get a clearance from them, and then come back to the DMV to show that she did pay it before they go ahead and let her renew her tags on her vehicle.
Yeah, all of that extra. All of that extra for...
They got me for almost $5,000 one time when we bought our first home out in New Jersey. I had lived in California for years prior to that, and I had a couple of traffic tickets, moving violations, I guess speeding tickets that I wasn't even aware of. And years later, when I went to close on my house, that came in as a thing. And they told me in order to close on the house, I had to pay off the debt from California, which had accrued to nearly $5,000 from an original of less than $200. Less than $200 turned into $5,000. And I had no choice but to pay it or lose the money we had put in on the house already.
Wow. Well, speaking of, you know, scams and financial stuff like that, I don't know if y'all saw this story. I want to share this story in the last few minutes that we have for today's program. But I heard that a lot, particularly because they're targeted, a lot of black people had that Rush card, Y'all know what I'm talking about, that rush card, Russell, that credit card, Russell Simmons. And I saw a headline on Facebook, and it was published by Jezebel.com, saying that around 68 million Americans are unbanked or underbanked, either living without a bank account or relying on alternative predatory financial institutions like payday loans and check cashes and prepaid payroll cards. One product on the last category, the Russell Simmons founded Rush Card, which puts people in a labyrinth of jacked up transaction fees for the privilege of getting their paycheck 2 days early, froze thousands of their users out of their accounts last week, leaving them stranded and moneyless during an absurdly protracted period of the company trying to get their system back up after what they're calling a botched technology transition. So let's listen to this short clip. This is Uncle Rush himself talking about this, I guess. So let's listen to this.
In the process of upgrading and improving our Rush Card services, many of you are hurt by problems that occurred during the technology transition. We know who you are, and I know you are facing tremendous challenges. I want to personally reassure you that your funds are safe and that we are addressing every issue as quickly as possible. I also know how important it is for you to access your money quickly. Let me tell you what is happening. As I speak, we are processing all direct deposits that we received by 11 p.m. last night. We are correcting account balances and problems with cardholder access as fast as we can, but this may take up to a few days for the affected customers. We are identifying customers who are affected and beginning to reach out to all those impacted. We normally give you access to your direct deposit 2 days earlier than your regular payday. Unfortunately, this week, we won't be able to do this, but you will get your money on your actual payday. I've been putting my heart into serving Rush Card customers for 12 years, and I cannot tell you how upsetting this is for me, my employees, and everyone affected by these difficulties. We are working 24/7 to solve these issues. I deeply apologize for the hardship this is causing and give you my solemn commitment that we will fix these problems, make your Rush Card experience better than ever, and work every day to rebuild your trust. Thank you.
Well, I don't know anyone with the Rush Card, but my daughter and I even had at one time, because I was a custodial parent, but I had a North Carolina State child support card where the funds go on this card and whatnot. And they even forced the card on me. There was like some arrearage at one time, and it was like $1,000 or so. I'm not going to say how much it was. And they asked me, did I want it on a debit card or did I want a check? And I told them, I want a check. Send me a check. I don't want no debit card. I don't want none of that. I don't want to be in the system. Just send me a check. And they put me in the system anyway and sent me this debit card. And I'm looking at all the paperwork and reading the transaction fees. And I mean, for everything. I mean, if you go check your balance, 25 cents. You know, you can't even, it's like you can't do anything. If you call customer service, all right, because the website messing up or what, it's a charge for that, 25 cents for that. My daughter, who also has the same card, was looking to purchase a vehicle, and they was trying to verify her income. And so you usually could access the account online, all right? And because you could not and was having issues, had to call customer service. Had to keep calling customer service about 3 times. And then I was like saying, don't hang up on them. Make them stay on the line or what. But my point is, it was a charge just to call customer service, 25 cents per call. Just, you know, all of these, I think maybe 50 cent to withdraw some money or something like that. And so what I did was I took the card, went to an ATM that's local here that doesn't even charge an access fee. I don't know why it doesn't, but there's one ATM machine around here that, you know, it don't charge you no fee, whether you using your bank or not. It just doesn't charge you a fee. And I just took all of it out. It took me like 4 times, but I just took all the money out. because they forced these fees on you. And I heard that this rush card is very similar, and it just nickel and dimes the people to death and takes a considerable chunk of your money, you know, at the end of the day when it's all said and done. Those little fees add up. So I don't know. Do you guys ever had any, had a rush card, or know anybody that had a rush card, or what are your thoughts on these rush cards? Is Russ, Uncle Rush, saying that they having some problems?
Well, for me, it's predatory lending, plain and simple. It's criminal activity, if you ask me. The hood is full of pawn shops and places that will, you know, just rape you, really, for what little bit you got. Everything from rent-a-center, renting your furniture to you by the week for exorbitant prices, to, as I said, these pawn shops that are scattered throughout it. So I think that that is all helping in not only gentrification, but also this destruction of the black family in their own communities by preying upon the people who have the least to give. And Brother Rush is right on the top of that list of taking advantage of that. And I personally have never had a Rush card. I don't get involved. Ever since way back in the day with the lawsuit with Rent-A-Center, I've avoided any kind of predatory lending industries like the title loan places and things like that. Once or twice we had to in an emergency, but that's it.
Sarah, you got any thoughts?
I've never had the fees because I've always been with a credit union ever since way back when. I've almost 30 years now I've been with a credit union. But unfortunately, there are people who they call the unbanked, people who due to circumstances where their credit got jacked up because of medical bills, divorce, repossession, whatever, and they can't get a regular bank account, so they have to go to these places. Because I even see Walmart now. They're doing that now. You can go to Walmart. I think they charge like a $5 fee a month, whereby you can get a Walmart-type debit card, and you can get your paycheck put on that card, but they charge you a $5 flat rate fee, which sounds better than the Rush card. But they don't charge you for making inquiry or making balance inquiry, or if you use it at like a point-of-sale transaction, use a PIN number, charge you a fee for that. You know, this is, you know, the people who could least afford it. These are the ones who are being ripped off. And Russell Simmons needs to be ashamed of himself. He could play the Buddhist chant and do all this crazy stuff. Did he walk away with all them beef and think he's a Dalai Lama? But for you to be a black man and put your name on this card, I know, even though it's not your bank, but you endorse and you let them use your image to put them on this credit card to get a lot of black people and others out here to go and invest in this card. And for you to let them do something like that to these poor people who could least afford it, you need to disassociate yourself with a predatory company like that. I have no sympathy for people like that, because Russ don't really need that type of money. He can disassociate himself from it.
I will certainly agree. He's putting himself out there like he's a financial stakeholder, like he's a owner. With that personalized message, I heard a lot of "I'm" and "I've been with them" and things of that nature. But yeah, and I don't understand, you know, if you have a paycheck, to have something that you could have a direct deposit, so that means you're working. You, whether you're getting a check from McDonald's, wherever, you know, you're trying to survive. If you're getting a paycheck, you can do direct deposit in a credit union or in a bank or something like that. And but we know a lot of these, like, fast food workers and even hotel or service sector, they don't have unions. And see, usually unions will have their own credit unions and things of that nature. I've been with credit unions through jobs and stuff like that. A lot of our people that's working in these, you know, service sector jobs like that, they don't have union representation. So, but I'm like trying to think, well, what still would prohibit them from getting a bank account? You know, whether it's with, you know, Bank of America, certainly not endorsing any of those major banks, but still, getting a bank account would be better for them.
The credit check that they run
credit checks on banks, and they will stop you from opening up an account with them?
Yes, if they see that you had, like, repossessions or things like that, it's almost like a credit card check when they run you for a credit card. A lot of these major banks, if they see you have delinquency in your past, they're going to turn you down for an account. And that is why a lot of people, they call them the unbanked. They have to go to these places and buy these type of cards within which to put their money, because they can't go to any one of these local bank and open an account there.
Okay, I understand the industry better. Thank you for that, Sarah. And thank you, Max. And I want to thank the listeners who tuned in today. We come to the end of the program. I won't be back on air myself personally until New Abolitionist Radio Wednesday night, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. But Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time today, as well as Why You Mad Son Radio every Tuesday night at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So keep it locked on Black Talk Radio Network. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines. Mr. Jones was just waiting on a tow truck today. On Sunday, he was just waiting on a tow truck. He told his brother his car had broke down on the I-95 exit down there where he was at Palm Beach Gardens. And next thing we know, he's dead. So recognize the fact that we live behind enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there. Casualties are being created every day. We don't even have a full and accurate count, because we don't know exactly how many are being killed because police departments aren't mandated to turn those into essential body like the Department of Justice or the FBI to keep those statistics. They can report everything else, like all the arrests they made, and justifying why they should get federal grant money and stuff to arrest immigrants or to fight the drug war. But for some reason, they can't report how many people they're shooting and killing. That just doesn't make sense to me. So with all this going on, you need to just develop skills and codifications to decrease the likelihood that you will become a casualty or your family members. And it really can come down to that. Life or death can just come down to just being aware of your surroundings. And until we have a better place to where we can feel safe, then, it's best to ever remain vigilant and also teach your children that vigilance. Until I talk to y'all Wednesday night, peace and blessings again to all.
Brothers and sisters, I don't know what this world is coming to.